In case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast,
we had this.
We've had great success over the last few years, but I think that performance the other night maybe embodied what Offaly was about over the years. Seamus Darby's late goal, the 94 comeback. Everyone was afraid of Offaly coming down the stretch.
And we also had this.
Now, you come from a different sport, obviously, but I'm almost emotional for Offaly. It's absolutely inspiring, and it's such a blueprint for everyone else. You said other counties, but other sports. I've just been blown away with the last sort of 15, 20 minutes, and I'm glad it's being heard nationally.
You can catch everything from this morning's Off the Ball breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning from 7:30.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 0.0, proud partner of Croke Park Stadium and proud partner of the GAA.
You are very welcome back to another episode of Settle In here on Off the Ball. Kathleen McNamee here with Boydie Syatt. Boydie, thank you so much for coming in. Your story is really interesting in terms of not growing up in Ireland, having to go through that entire process of adjusting to what Irish weather was like, never mind all the culture and everything else. Can you take us back to, I suppose, the very beginning of your life and just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I suppose I grew up in Liberia, Monrovia, in the city. So I grew up a city boy. But luckily in Liberia, in Monrovia, the beach is very near. So where I was staying was, you know, you're fishermen. So my uncles and that were fishermen. But my early memories growing up in Liberia is there was civil war going on at the time. So for me, I was being moved around a lot. My father was dropping me to my sisters, and then my sisters dropped me to my brothers. And so for the first, I'd say from since I was maybe 4 to 8, I was being moved around a lot. So my memory of Liberia is very kind of faded, if you get me.
And in terms of that moving around a lot, did that kind of give you a stronger sense, I suppose, of the country, and that you weren't just in the one place, even though you left when you were still relatively young?
Yeah, I suppose, well, to be honest, moving around is going from one house to the other, which is probably like, I'd say moving from, I don't know, Dublin maybe to South Dublin or North Dublin. Yeah, it wasn't like I was moving from one side of the country to the other. It was the one area.
Okay.
But the biggest move was probably from there to here. From Liberia to Ireland, that's probably the biggest move.
And do you remember much about that move and what it was like at the time?
Yeah, I just remember my uncle Ben coming over and telling me that I was going to be moving over to Ireland. And I remember, I say this a lot, but I remember the only place that growing up in Liberia a kid knows is America and Liberia. So I automatically thought I was going to America. So there's me shouting to all my friends, telling all my friends I'm going to America. And yeah, he was like, no, not America, it's Europe. So that's the first I've ever heard about Ireland. And to say the least, I had no clue where I was going. So I just knew I was going somewhere that's going to be better, but I had no clue where I was going to land.
And in terms of when the plane did touch down in Ireland, and I assume like your knowledge of America was probably from like TV shows and like popular culture.
Yeah.
Was there any closeness to the two in your head when you first kind of came in that, I suppose, Western culture, there's some similarities there, but it's not maybe the shiny stuff that you would see on television?
Yeah, the closeness is probably seeing white people for the first time. I suppose, like, landing in the airport, you're like, you're seeing security people are white, and you're like, okay, yeah, that's probably the only relation I can make of it. Like, you're a kid growing up where it's like dirt poor, so you don't really know anything outside the country. So for me, it was just white people. You know, I was like, wow, I'm in a different country. You know, that was about it, really.
Mm. Yeah. I'd say the weather was a bit of a shock as
well. Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, of course. Irish weather. It was February as well when I landed. So, and it was a cold February too. So it was freezing cold. I never experienced weather like that before. So in Liberia, you have, say in West Africa, you have two seasons. You have sunny season and rainy season. But when it rains, it's not that cold. So that's the only season I ever heard of. And then when I landed here in Ireland, you get proper winters where it's absolutely Baltic. But that was a shock to the system, all right?
And because you were still quite young at that stage, you know, could you really understand or kind of contemplate what was going on or the move or what it meant for you in general?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's funny, like, when your world is kind of being switched around so rapidly, it's something you really don't forget. Do you know, like, I was the only one being moved over, so obviously I'm like, I'm gonna take in as much as I can, you know, for my sisters and for my family back home. So yeah, I remember every detail of moving over, even from stepping off the plane to hopping into my uncle's little mini green car, I think it was a Mini Cooper or something small like that, to driving over to Rosemont to visit who was potentially going to be my granny at the time, which I've never met before. Do you know? So yeah, all those experiences are super memorable.
It must be like overwhelming to be that young as well, to be taking in all this, to feel that pressure, I suppose, on your shoulders, that you do want to take all as much in as you can for your family, to, I suppose, experience it as well as you can for them as well.
Yeah, there's definitely, there's, at the time, obviously, there was no pressure, but it's when you go back and visit is where people, you know, like, what are you doing with yourself? What's happening over there? But when you're a kid coming over, they're like, it doesn't feel like pressure, but it feels like I'm definitely here to make a better life for myself. So, geez, I may go back home and tell them that I am doing something good for myself, you know, but yeah.
And was there much interest about Ireland back in Liberia?
Not until I came over. Not until I came over. But like my sisters and that are a lot older than me. I'm the youngest in the family. Okay. So they would have kind of heard about Liberia, about Ireland. And, you know, I make sure to keep in contact with them as much as possible, to tell them what I'm doing, like what's happening with me, what sport I'm playing, and what school I'm going to. I try to keep them in the loop as much as possible.
So when you came over, would you have gone into first class? Would that have been the kind of age that you were? How was that experience of going into an Irish school? Because I assume very different curriculum.
It was terrifying. Yeah, it was scary. It was such a scary experience because you're mixing with kids around the same age. I was actually technically like maybe a year older than the group I went into school with. But you're dealing with kids that your own age. You don't know how they're going to react to seeing. And went to Rosemont School, which is a small rural area where, to be honest, they, like, my uncle had a daughter, Maureen, she's mixed, but other besides her, they hadn't seen a black guy before. So for them, it was a shock. For me, it was a shock. So everyone was just...
Everyone was staring at each other, shocked.
Yeah, bit of both sides. We're both staring at each other. But yeah, it was a huge experience and very nerve-wracking as well.
Was it easy? Obviously very nerve-wracking, but as time went on, you know, did you adjust to everyone around you, and did they adjust to you? Because as you were saying,
yeah,
a new experience
yeah.
in terms of first black person walking in, and I imagine for them that was as like intriguing and something they had questions about.
Yeah, I think that's probably the good thing about being kids, that kids accept everything and anything.
Yeah.
Do you know? So for me, fitting in, it was no problem. Obviously, at the start, it was a shock for everyone, but fast forward a week later, we're all best friends playing sports outside, you know, being given out to by the teacher at the same time, you know, all that things, you're kids. So it's not like they're sitting back thinking, oh God, how do I act around this? We're all children. So we all got on straight away.
And then when did GA and that side of sport come into your life?
Yeah, it would have been primary school, around the same time me coming over. We used to have a guy named Jim, who I'm actually fairly close with still.
Oh, that's awesome.
He used to come over and do GA every Friday. I think most schools around Ireland used to do that. So someone used to come in, or the teacher or the principal used to do, like, you know, games or whatever every Friday with the little kids. And he used to come in, do it with us. And from there, I suppose, is when I decided to fall in love with the sport. You know, obviously, I played soccer as well. Soccer was my first love, and then got introduced to GAA, and that became, you know, favourite sport.
Do you have a soccer team?
Liverpool.
Oh, so you're very happy at the moment.
I'm very happy at the moment. I had a few years where it was it was dodgy, but yeah, happy at the moment.
Well, as an Arsenal fan, Crystal Palace certainly
saved us big time.
Yeah. Made things a lot easier in the last week.
Oh, yeah.
And so did you take much from loving soccer as an initial sport and bring that into the GA, as in seeing the sort of similarities that were there in terms of control and things?
I actually thought it was a lot easier because you were able to hold it with your hand. So I thought that was, I was like, this is intriguing. How you can hold it with your hand so no one can get the ball off you. With soccer, it's all on the feet. Someone could just slide tackle you, but I could just pick up the ball. It was fine. So I think being okay at soccer kind of definitely transformed into the GAA world, if you get me. It made it a little bit easier for me. I was fast, I could kick the ball hard, so it was easy to play the two of them.
Mm. And was it the sort of game that you fell for straight away, or did it take some time? And
No, it was pretty straight away. I wasn't good at it. I was absolutely terrible, right? But I'm one of those people who's really determined, so I wanted to be good at it. So practice a lot and just kind of try to make myself good at the sport. And yeah, as I said, I was very bad, but I'm not too bad anymore.
Well, I was going to say, you have, you know, not many people can say that they've played for their county. You know, that's a pretty high honour to have. Yeah. What was the point where, I know you're saying you're practicing lots, but what was the point where someone maybe spotted in you, oh, okay, this guy has something special, we can put him all the way?
Yeah, I suppose, like, there was probably a good group of us around the same age who were good for our club from under 16 level. And we were lucky enough to have like Sir John Kane, who used to coach us underage from like under 14s, 15s. He used to coach us the way. So he was kind of just lumping in some tips into us as young lads. And I suppose he probably seen, and a lot of different trainers at that age group as well, seeing that we were good and like, use a lot of their spare time to try and coach us to make us a little bit better as well. And look, like, you only look back now and realise, geez, they must have put in some serious hard work to get us playing well and developing our skills a lot. But at the time, you don't really think about that. You're just thinking, oh, I want to play games. But then we're fortunate enough to have such great coaches in our club that helped us along the way.
We chatted to Sean Ogue a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about how, you know, his family came from Fiji to Ireland. So again, culture shock, very, very different. And how the GAA really helped him acclimatize and almost show people, you know, I'm just like you guys. I may look a little bit different, but, you know, we have the same passions, we same interests. Did you find that the GAA helped you in terms of settling in Ireland, and also I suppose because you had left a lot of family behind and given you, I suppose, another support system or another group of people in your life?
Yeah, the GAA definitely became like a second family to me. You know, it's the same in every community in Ireland. Like, the GAA family is like their own family. You know, everyone's involved in it. Everyone that's involved in it are super close. And the same in my little area in Rosemount, where if you're involved in the GAA, people will do anything for you. They'll help you with whatever you need. And I suppose that's what I got, which was great. Got a lot of that from, you know, from like coaches, from parents, everyone that's involved in that GAA world. And to be honest, you don't have to be involved in it. If you're interested or part of the community in that sense, everyone's there for you.
Mm. And it's great to have that, because I don't think... I suppose sometimes it's something that we can very easily take for granted growing up in Ireland, because you just almost accept that it's the same all over the place. But I don't think there is a sport that has its tentacles in every aspect of community or Irish life in the way that the GAA does.
Yeah, it's crazy. If you're in the GAA, like, everyone knows everything about you, basically. Do you know, that's how it goes. As it can be a positive or a negative thing, but most of the time it's a positive thing, you know, when everyone is there supporting you and wants to be involved with whatever is going on in your life and helping you for the club or for yourself. It's great in that sense.
Mm. No? And tell me a little bit about what it was like when you did get that call up to the intercounty setup. You know, was that a goal of yours whenever you were training, or were you more just like, I'm enjoying this, I want to be good at it?
Yeah, that's a good one. I suppose it was more enjoyment. It was kind of a long road before I got my inter-county debut, per se, with the seniors. I played under 16s, minor, 21. It was 21 at the time, and then senior. But I suppose it was more of a stepping stone. And I remember I was on my way back from college in Waterford, and Tom Cribbin rang me and was like, oh, would you like to, you know, play with the seniors? And they just, it was that summer, they just got to a Leinster final for the first time in a long time.
Mm.
And I was like, holy shit, that's unreal. But it wasn't something that I was gunning for, that I was like, oh, I really want to play for the senior team. It was more, as you said, it was more of, if it happens, it happens. I wasn't thinking about it. I was thinking about just playing the best football I can. And it was funny because I was in the middle of, I was just finishing my leaving cert as well, and all the lads, the lads were booking holidays, trying to get away. And he was like, "Do you want to come onto the panel?" And I was like, "I've a holiday." But, you know, it was, you don't say no to something like that. You know, if you get a call up at, you know, I'm 18 years old, got a call up to senior team, it's not something you say no to. So I was straight up like, yes, 100%.
I think everyone can relate to that moment where someone offers you something and you're like, oh, the holiday.
Yeah. Do you know, a 6-year holiday with the lads, or, you know, play some senior football. And I think I picked the right choice.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think you definitely did, in that you've made a lifetime of memories already, yeah, with the 100%. Career. And, yeah, you know, the 6-year holiday would have been good, but there's always another holiday, I suppose. You might not get that call again to ask you to put on the jersey. What was the setup like at the time? Because you mentioned there about getting to the Leinster final. It was like a relatively successful period of time for the team.
Yeah. So at that time when I was called up, it was more, you know, I was called up to the panel just to train with the lads and just to get familiar being there. I was only 18 at the time, so I wasn't expected to be starting or playing games. So it was just training session. But the setup was one of those super professional setup. We're fortunate enough to be playing against the, you know, 6-in-a-row Dublin team that year. But, you know, it was a huge moment for Westmeath. The whole, I think it was one of the most supported team in Leinster at the time, because I think it's been a couple of years since we were in the Leinster final, so everyone was kind of, you know, behind that group. And the setup, as you said, was super professional. I think everyone was, you know, gunning for that one as well. But as I said, Dublin were there. But
you weren't the only ones to be outdone by the Dubs in that time, or in the time since as well.
Yeah.
What's that feeling like, you know, lining up in somewhere like Croke Park, where obviously it's a dream of so many people to play there in some capacity, whether that's, you know, you're a kid and you get to play at halftime, or you're like mounting the Hogan stand to lift a trophy at the end of the All-Ireland, whether it's hurling or football. But just to get that opportunity to line out there, what was it like for you?
Yeah, I had two like really great moments in Croke Park, and one of them were when we got to a Leinster minor final, and I had my grandfather there and my whole family there at the time watching that game. And, you know, just to have that support system behind you playing in Croke Park for the first time was probably one of the best memories I'll keep with me forever. And the second one was winning a Division 3 in Croke Park at the time as well. That was huge, lifting a trophy in Croke Park. And it's only when you think back at it, like, so many people don't get to experience anything like that. And for me to do that with a great group of lads was unreal, yeah.
Yeah, the closest I've ever got is going to see Bruce Springsteen in Croke Park. Standing in the middle of the pitch and looking around me and being more excited about the fact that I was on the pitch at Croke Park.
Not
for any sporting reason, obviously, but a good moment in my life. And yours definitely tops that by quite a bit.
That's the thing. Even if it's small little moments where you get to play in Croke Park, it could be anything. You know, it's something that you really remember forever, you know. I'd be talking to some lads at the club, and some of them would still be asking questions like, how is it like to play in Croke Park? And when you're doing it at the time, it doesn't seem like such a big deal. Do you know, you're playing either a league or you're playing championship. It doesn't seem like a big deal, but it's when you're stepping out of that bubble, it's special.
And your head is probably so focused on the game in front of you as
exactly.
In the moment. You know, you don't really have the time to be standing there looking around you, being like, wow.
true. Yeah, you don't really think about that at all.
And can your family in Liberia kind of understand how big that is to line out in a stadium like that? Because obviously in an like European context, Croke Park is one of the biggest stadiums in Europe. But there's obviously a lot, like, I assume soccer is a more popular sport there. There's obviously a lot bigger soccer stadiums around the world. But can they kind of contextualize that at all?
Yeah, that's the thing. They don't. So a lot of them think I'm playing soccer. So I try to explain to them what the GAA is and what sport I play, and they try to understand, but they still don't, you know. But like, I try to explain to them what it's like to play in Croke Park and the stadium, show them pictures and stuff like that, and they're amazed by it. but they don't really understand it either, but they're just still amazed by it, which I love to see as well. Mm. Yeah.
Have you had the opportunity to bring many of them over here over the years?
No, I haven't. Like, I'm the youngest in my family, so I haven't got a chance to bring them over. It's a little bit more complicated for them to come over.
Of course.
You know, with, you know, passports and visas and stuff like that. But I try to go back as much as I can, you know. So I was there about 2 years ago for Christmas, and yeah, like, class. Yeah, it's unreal. Weather, you know, beaches. Christmas time over there is sun, so it's, you know, it's different.
Very different to here.
Very different, yeah.
The sun may be shining, but it's guaranteed to be cold at all stages.
100%.
And how do you, I suppose, marry those two identities now then, of being Irish and being Liberian?
Yeah, like, I think I'm more Irish than I'm Liberian. I've been here, what, 21 years now, nearly 22 years. And I only grew up in Liberia 8 years. So I think I'm more Irish than I am Liberian. But I do like to have this two identity, you know, I remember where I'm from, where I was born. But I think it's an honor being Irish. You know, it's, you know, everyone asks me would I want to stay here or move abroad or go back. And I'm like, no, I think I want to stay in Ireland. Like, I love it here. Mm. My home, you know.
Well, it's great to have that feeling, because for so many people to come so far away from what they know, that isn't always the experience. You know, it's not always that they do find a home and feel very, very comfortable in the culture and everything. And as you say, I mean, you are incredibly well in with the GAA and with all that side of things as well, which probably helps a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Definitely helps. I think that's what made it easier for me to love it here so much. It's being so involved in the, say, GA world. Like, I was fortunate to get a lot of opportunities being involved in GA. So I suppose that's probably made it easier for me, you know, to love it here as much as I do, you know. As not everyone can say that. So I don't think I'd be going anywhere soon. So I'm happy enough.
And we were talking about earlier, you know, going into the classroom for the first time, being the first time that a lot of the kids had seen a black person, and the same experience for you when you're arriving and suddenly seeing all these white people. Have you found the experience, I suppose, of being a very obvious representative of black people in the GAA, in that there aren't a whole lot of black players that we've seen over the years? You know, we have in different sports, we've kind of seen that, but in the GAA, it's still something that hasn't totally broken through.
Yeah, that was like, I'm going to say when I first started playing with Westmeath, I think I was the only black GAA players playing at the time. And over the years now, if you look, there's like minors, under 16s, there's a lot more, which is great. But it hasn't been, I suppose, I've been kind of representing them, trying to push it as much as I could, trying to push, say, young lads to get involved in it. And I think what they don't know about the GAA is how community-based and how supported it can be in your life as well as on the pitch, if you get me. Like, going to college, it'll help you get a scholarship if you need to. A lot of people don't really know about those kind of stuff, and they think soccer might be the way to do it. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. I think it's a lot harder to make it in soccer than it is through the GAA. But I think a lot of people don't understand. I'm kind of relating to other black people in my sense, that don't really understand why people play this sport and what benefits you can get out of it and how much it can help you through your life and whatnot. And I tried to push that as much as I could, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think you're probably right about the soccer element, and that people will always see. It's very easy, you know, you could put someone like Mo Salah up on a pedestal and it's very obvious that he's earning hundreds of thousands of euros a week. But again, how do you get to that place? Whereas there are all those benefits that you've just mentioned there in the GAA, and it's a lot easier to rock up to a club in the GAA, you know, play it from a young age and potentially progress to that inter-county level.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, of course, if you want to do that as well, you got to enjoy the sport too, you know. And, you know, if you enjoy it, it makes it a little bit easier. But as you said, it's a lot easier to do that and to see the benefits and the pride and the joy you get out of it. And I try to push that as much as I can to get other people involved in it, you know. It's not as easy, but, you know, I tried to make it work. Yeah.
And do you think because there isn't as much representation of Black Irish people in GAA that maybe there's a fear there as well from some people that they're going to, you know, face racism or face a backlash because of how they look?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I've got messages of different kids that, you know, I've gotten, like, abuse of other people from being involved in the GAA and getting a lot of people that are, said, crowds or other managers or other players, and they're trying to figure out how to deal with it. And, you know, that's some hard questions that, you know, you can't give to someone how to react. You know, I'm trying to say to them, oh, no, stay calm, you know, have a good group of people around you that can help you out. And there's definitely that fear there where, say, when I was playing, I didn't have someone that I could look at and be like, oh, yeah, he can play the sports, I can do it too. I just did it anyway. And you get that with younger lads as well, where they don't see that, or they might see me and be like, oh, if he can do it, I can do it as well. But sometimes they don't have that, and that could be a fear as well, saying, oh, I won't bother doing that. No one like me does it, so why would I do it, you know? But, yeah, and then the fear as well with racism might kick in, and sometimes it does kick in, and how to react to that. Who do they go to? Who do they talk to? Do you know? How do referees deal with it? How do managers deal with it? People don't really know. And once it happens to them, they might just step back and be like, they don't have to deal with it, so they'll... Do you know? So it's a tricky one. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it something that you've seen a lot on the pitch? Or?
For me personally, no. But I've heard from other people, which I find shocking in a sense.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't happened to me. I don't know how to react and tell someone how to react either.
Yeah.
Do you know?
It's also, I suppose, a lot of the time when we talk about this, you do only hear the bad stories. And I think it's brilliant to hear that you have had that experience, that, you know, you've had... A, the support of your teammates around you, but also that just hasn't been an issue that's come up on the pitch.
Yeah, for me, I've been very lucky. You know, it's happened around people I've been around with. Like, years ago, I don't like bringing it up, but years ago, something happened when we were minor, and, you know, that was a big, big thing at the time. But other than that, towards me, hasn't happened, which I'm, like, so lucky. And that's what I'm saying there. When someone says, oh no, this is happening to me, and like, I'm like, how do I give advice? How do I help this person? Or what can I say in this situation? But yeah.
I suppose you're already saying so much just by turning up and being there.
Yeah,
have you ever felt the heaviness of that? Or has it always just been because you love the sport and you enjoy what you're doing, it hasn't felt as heavy as maybe other people might have found it?
Yeah, that's probably it. I don't find it as heavy. Other people find it harder to hear it. Like, for an example there, I remember, I think there was a video up on YouTube, and you had these comments of people making, like, total racist comments under the video. And my sister and my mother were getting very angry about it. And they were like, why are you so calm about it? What's going on? And I'm like, if I react to that, that's going to make it worse. And sister kind of understood that. I was like, what's the point of reacting to something? Like, there's nothing I can do about it. And she kind of understood. I'm like, yeah, we delete the comment. We won't message them back. We leave them. Do you know what I mean? What's the point of acting in an aggressive or an angry, or what's it going to do to me? And
yeah.
Do you know? It's not going to make me feel better.
No.
You know?
So. I know, sometimes it's the hardest thing to do. It's
exactly.
To step away, but it's totally the right thing to do, because you're taking any oxygen away from that person.
Yeah.
And the likelihood as well is probably that you're going to annoy them more by not responding.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, responding is what they want. They want you to react. And not reacting is probably the best way to do it.
Oh. You've had some cool experiences outside of the GAA. You got to do Hell Week.
Oh, yeah.
What was that like?
Jesus. Hell Week was probably one of the best experiences of my life. It was unbelievable. But I'd never do it again. Never do it again. That was a great experience. She's coming in. Yeah. No, it was a savage experience, now, in fairness. Good group of people that we're doing it with as well. And the DSs are no joke.
But I think it's a lot of people watch those shows and, you know, you can never tell with things how real it actually is in terms of what they put you through. But I'm judging by your reaction that it is all incredibly real.
Like when the DS is, when the camera is rolling, right, you don't even know it's rolling because it's like cameras in the corner. And once you're on the island that we had to get on, they don't give a shit about the cameras. Like, it's literally like they're not even there. So they will grill you until you decide to quit. And that's the way they do it. But as I said, it was the best experience, but worst experience at the same time.
What was the activity that you found the toughest to do?
Probably the one that got me out. So we were doing this. It was funny. We were doing this. It was kind of like, it wasn't really a hike. It was more like a, I don't know, they wanted us to go through this trail, and we were in the water for a while with backpacks, and then we had to flip this boat, and then we were asked to just walk, keep going through this muck, and there was this mucky area. It was like quicksand, so every time you stay still, you just sank. So trying to get out of that was nearly close to impossible, so you had to try to crawl yourself out of it, and then they had us doing all these tasks on it, and then for some reason, it started raining. And I've never seen rain like that before, ever in Ireland, which is...
We're saying something.
Yeah, it absolutely poured down, thunder and lightning. And the DSs had to tell us to get out of the rain because the thunder and the lightning started happening, to go underneath the trees for shelter. Wow. We're like, what is this? And it's like, is this supposed to happen? Like, you think, you know, it's a TV show. It is not supposed to happen, but it was just mental. But yeah. And then legs just give in. And that was when I was like, I have to call it a day. My legs couldn't go anymore. And that was definitely the hardest point of that.
Yeah, that does not sound pleasant at all, I won't lie.
No,
I have definitely complained about lining out on like a muddy GA pitch before, but I don't think you'll ever.
Like, I thought that would be tough as well. I know, like, I've experienced that too, and it was the toughest thing ever, but this is 10 times worse. I don't know how some lads got through it, but yeah.
And how did you find the... I suppose mental aspect of it, because you need to have incredible physical strength to get through it, but for a lot of those challenges as well, it's the mental fortitude that kind of gets you to the end point of just being like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah, I think the good thing about that show is they try to get you to work as a team. So if you're an individual kind of person, you wouldn't last 2 minutes there at all. Like, you know, some of the tasks you have to do where it's pure mental to keep going and keep going. If you're on your own just thinking about it, you wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes. So it was, I think it was me and Ty for one course we had to do, where we had to hop out of the helicopter into the water and then swim to get the bag and then go up. But the hard part about that wasn't actually swimming. There was these stairs that were, I'd say it was 200 meters up upstairs, and the two of us had to carry this backpack up. And like, if he wasn't with me doing that, I would have just... You know, you would have just called it quits, but it's having someone there that can drag you through that hell, and so you don't have to think about it all yourself, you know.
And did that help you then when you were going back to football and kind of, you know, going back into the GA, in that you had challenged yourself so much that anything after that probably... not easier is probably the wrong word, because there are different types of challenges, but, you know, you'd kind of proven something in a way, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose. It did help. I think it helped with everyday life, to be honest. It was, you know, if you're going through something, there's definitely someone going through it tougher, like, do you know what I mean? There's tougher things out there than what you're doing. And I think it helped through life and the GA as well, even with training and stuff like that. I was like, no, I've done tougher things. You're well able for this. And you kind of automatically sometimes switch back to that. You're like, no, what them lads and the DSs and stuff and what they do is 10 times tougher than this. You're well able to keep going. Mm. But yeah, I suppose you do kind of reflect on both sometimes.
There are lads complaining in training sessions afterwards and you're like, you don't understand what pain is.
Yeah. Like, watching on TV, it's completely different than doing that. Like, try to explain to them. They're like, how did you go out on that? And I'm like, man, you don't understand. You know, it's a lot harder there than watching it. But yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of the legacy that you've put on the GAA, what would you like that to be in terms of inspiring? Like, would it be inspiring, young Black Irish kids to get involved in the GAA, to see all the benefits of it? Is it just the simple act of being there? You know, how would you see that legacy?
For me anyway, it's definitely to see any culture playing the sport, not just Black, you know, any culture. Mm. Like, once, you know, Ireland is getting so diverse, and some people like it and some people don't, but once someone's involved in the culture and the sport, I think it's great to see. Like, if you have Black, Asian, anyone involved in it, I think that's what I'd love to see anyway. I don't know about my legacy. I don't think I have a legacy, to be honest with you. I just play the sport and love doing it. But for me, it's seeing all the different cultures getting involved in it and really, you know, challenging and playing it from under 14s, under 10s, all the way to senior level. And I would love to see more of that happening.
Well, I think I can definitely get behind that. And I think a lot of other people would, because, as you say, we are becoming an incredibly diverse country and have been for a while. And we can only learn from that, which I think sometimes people forget that, you know, there are many different ways to be Irish and to represent Ireland. And I think you've done a brilliant job of that. And hopefully there are some young kids listening to this and it does encourage them to go into the sport, because there are so many great benefits from it.
Yeah, 100%. I'd love to see more being involved. You know, that's the thing, just more and more. Just being part of a community as well. I think that's one thing, you know, like, if you're from a different country and you wanna find a way of being part of the community, join your local GAA club, be involved in the community in that sense. And
Well, brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Settling
is brought to you by Guinness 00, proud partners of Croke Park and the GAA. Thank you very much for listening.
Settle In on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 00, proud partner of Croke Park Stadium and proud partner of the GAA.
This Thursday night, we're wrapping up the Premier League season with a brilliant live show at the Goat Bar in Dublin. Going to be joined by Liverpool legend Steve McMahon and a couple of Irish legends as well. Glenn Whelan and Richard Dunne are going to be along. That's this Thursday night, the 22nd of May, at the Goat Bar in Dublin. To get your tickets, head along to offtheball.com/events. It's all with thanks to Guinness. Never settle.